Welcome to part three of this American Cassette Ministry series featuring Dr. Lewis Walton. This five-part series is entitled, Hear, O Israel, and we are discovering lessons of faith for our generation. Here is Dr. Walton to introduce his third presentation entitled, Lessons from the Life of Moses.
Well, let's spend just a few minutes this morning in the life of a great man, in which there are great lessons and great encouragement. And the story begins with the smell of reeds and river moss, the gentle rocking of a little handmade boat made out of reeds. And they're porous enough that as the little craft rocks, bright shafts of light break through and make patterns of light on the little covers that shelter him. And then one day the lid comes off and that blazing Egyptian sun washes the little craft in which he lies. And there's a dark-haired lady peering in at him in wonder. And just maybe he hears the name for the first time then, because it means something with respect to his experience at that time. And he hears the word Moses. Through a miracle of the intervention of a watching Heavenly Father, that little boy spends the first probably 12 years of his life not in the temple setting of the Egyptian palace, but in the household of a godly mother. And there is no influence on this earth as important, let alone more important, than that of the mother. We talked this morning about how even before a child is born, he or she is absorbing the sensory input that the mother feels. And then in the first few months of life, the impress of that mother's character is largely put into that child like an imprint into wet clay, and it hardens, and that person becomes a human being and takes the character of the mother, and to a lesser extent, I think, the father, because he or she may see the father less. And so it was with Moses. Then as a boy, he's taken out of that home into a setting which is almost unparalleled in the history of the world. Great Egyptian civilization, there in those columned avenues, in the palaces in what will one day be called Cairo. And there is a place where great temples are erected, temples to heathen deities, temples to egocentric kings, temples like Karnak and Thebes, temples to the gods of the Nile. And the fabulous wealth of that great civilization is lavished, oddly enough, more on the dead than on the living. And the wealth that is packed away for the comfort of a departed king will dazzle the world 35 centuries later. Because you see, in the Egyptian system, their whole religious outlook is that the grave is our ultimate home. It's our only home. And our period of life on this earth, as we know it, is only a prelude to the hereafter. And the grave is the only home and the only hope. And he learns these things as he learns military science, as he learns leadership, as he learns the Egyptian language and culture. But in his heart, there is something that his mother left imprinted. And it won't go away. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. He doesn't turn loose of the great affirmation of faith. Well, he grows up, and he's probably one of the best educated people in the world, and it is coming time for him to ascend the throne of Egypt. He is in line for the position which there is no equal in the world of his day. But somehow in his mind and in life, there is that memory of a humble Goshen cottage and people from whom he was taken. but with whom he will always be identified. And one day he sees wrong. If anything in this world is wrong, it is slavery, and if there's anything worse than that, it's abuse of a slave, and he sees that going on, and one of his brothers is under the lash of a taskmaster. And Moses makes the mistake that most of us in our lives are very tempted to make, and that is to do the work of God in our own way. Moses isn't alone. Abraham had tried it too, hadn't he? As year after year, the son of promise doesn't appear, and he looks into the end moments of his life, and he sees no hope for the promise of God to create a great nation out of him. He finally tries to do God's work in his own way, doesn't he? And from that single mistake, that day with Hagar, the Egyptian lady, we now have the nightmare of today's Middle East. So Moses tries to do God's work in his own way, and he makes a mistake. And now it is out of Egypt, out into Midian, out into that wild, howling desert, where daytime temperatures, as we have been recently reminded, can hit 120 degrees in the shade, and there isn't any shade. And he begins 40 years of unlearning the world's best education. Now, there is nothing wrong with a good education. You can do more with sharp tools than you can with dull ones. But the problem is, the sharper the tool, the more dangerous it is if it is not used carefully. And education can be the greatest benefit to a man of God or the greatest curse, depending upon how it is used and depending upon whether education becomes a replacement for faith. And Moses has lessons to unlearn and other lessons he must learn. And he's got to learn you don't do it your way, you do it God's way, because you see, God has a little advantage over us. He can see tomorrow and we cannot. And so in Midian, 40 years worth of tending a humble creature called a sheep. And then one day he encounters the real E.T. He's out there on the backside of Horeb, on the backside of Sinai, and he sees something that doesn't make any sense. Scientifically, it is an axiom that when something is burned, it is consumed, because in order to burn, it gives off the stuff of which it is made. But this wild desert plant burns and doesn't disappear. There can be only one explanation. There is creative power here. And there is only one creator, Shema Israel Adonai Eloheinu, the one God. So Moses goes over. And I suspect not only his shoes come off, but the mantle goes up over his head. Whatever precursor to the tallin there was in those days. God has a plan. He is going to take a nation of enslaved people, and in the space of about 2 short years, he will show what God can do to human life. Turn it all the way around and make these people, who just months before had been making brick for their masters, he will take them to the summit of the world, the crossroads of the world, and they will demonstrate what it is like to fall in line with the mind of God. And the world will come calling to find out what it is like to serve the one true creator. Well, in his plan, he will lead these people through the desert. And they will experience in a very short time what Moses had to learn, and that is an absolute loss of reliance upon self. Because in the desert, they will have no food, no water, and no hope of survival unless a miraculous intervention occurs to keep them alive. And that will become so intense so quickly that character growth will be possible very rapidly, because I am convinced that character growth is mainly the process of learning to rely absolutely on God, even when you can't see the way through the problem. And if they can learn that lesson in just a matter of months, he will take them there to the foot of Sinai, where they will be given the fabulous gift of a clear view of the will of God expressed in the law, the Torah. They will also, as a bonus, get a clear view of what it is like to live helpfully, because laws of health will be given to them that will still be relevant in the emerging technology of the 1990s Common Era. They will have the clearest view that humanity will ever get of the plan of salvation, because to them God will unfold the sanctuary service and all of its rich symbolism that speaks of the oncoming Messiah. and they will be blessed with a living prophet. Now it is interesting to note that those characteristics, law, health, sanctuary service, and the gift of prophecy may just appear again in God's church in a later era. And when they do, you can mark it clearly that that is where God is. Well, if there is one thing the world needs in 1446 BC, it is what God plans to give them through the Jewish people. Because in a dim way, people everywhere recognize something's wrong. There's sand in the gears. Life is not what it should be. We weren't born to die. That's absurd for human beings to come into this world, fill their minds with knowledge, and just when it's time to really put that knowledge to work, they go into decline and death awaits them. That's wrong. Something's wrong. And people are grasping for answers. In a dim way, they recognize it's wrong. But in the pagan religions which they have fallen into, they are so confused that they believe God loves punishment, and in order to appease this unseen deity, they must create more pain. And so they craft these weird-looking idols that are hollow metal with their hands outstretched, and in the base of these things are built like a furnace. You can build a fire and stoke it and put the draft on it until the whole thing is glowing red hot. And into the outstretched hands of these weird, devilish creations, they put their children and watch them fry to death to appease the unseen, pain-loving God. It's time for a view of the true God, and Israel has the chance to give this to the world at the crossroads of the world where everyone has to come if you're going anywhere from anywhere. There was a need for what they had to do. Here at Sinai, God readies them for their work, and Moses climbs that 8,500-foot mountain. He's lost in incandescent light, and he emerges with that clear view of gospel called the sanctuary. And we're going to talk about that this afternoon when we get together again, whatever time after lunch. Because in the sanctuary service first given to Israel, you get a clear view of what sin is like and how God deals with sin in putting the whole human race back in harmony with the family of God in heaven. And our family is split right now. There are hostages in the cosmos. We're deep behind enemy lines, and the family has been split too long, and it's time to go home. And God shows in the sanctuary service how it happens, how sin is dealt with. And he shows how long-lived the effects of sin are, and how difficult it can be to take care of the consequences. Well, Israel is there for 1 year, absorbing truth, give or take a few weeks. Plan of salvation, health, law, gospel, prophecy. And then a mysterious voice is heard over the sanctuary. Ye have been in this mount long enough, turn ye northward, and it's time to head for the promised land. That shows you how quickly God's people can be home. Now, I think sometimes we maybe subconsciously get this mindset that it just takes decades to get ready to do the work of God. As we see how slowly his work is accomplished in our individual lives, sometimes it happens about as quickly as those stalactites are built in caves, you know, about an inch a year. And we look at our own lives and we see how slowly we are progressing sometimes, and we say, well, it'll take a long, long time to get ready to do God's work. Well, let me tell you something, it doesn't have to be that way. Because in the time of Israel, people who were so far removed from the worship of God that they had to be reintroduced to him by name could within a year be ready to go home and do the kind of witnessing the world needed to hear. Just a few weeks' walk, triumphal entry into the promised land, and if in fact the enemies of truth were standing there to repel the Jewish nation from their homeland, the Lord said, I can handle that. You don't have to draw your swords. I have little allies that will go before you. They're called hornets. I know those men up there, some of them are 10 feet tall and as mean as sin. They wear chain armor, and they'll be coming out to block your path. But don't worry about it. I can handle them. Have you ever tried to fight inside of armor with hornets inside of that? You get something else on your mind besides war. Don't worry about it. All you have to do is walk, stand still, and see the salvation of the Lord. And that would have been the plan. Faith lived out before an awestruck world while nothing can stand in the way of God's plan for this special group of witnessing people. And there, unfortunately, God's people, so much like us, fail, and they fail on the test of faith. And that would have been the plan. Faith lived out before an awestruck world, while nothing can stand in the way of God's plan for this special group of witnessing people. And there, unfortunately, God's people, so much like us, fail, and they fail on the test of faith. The place is Kadesh Barnea. And instead of acting in pure reliance upon the expressed will of God, they say, well, before we advance into the homeland, let's collect some data so that we can be sure God is capable of doing what he has promised to do. And so the 12 spies go out and they come back and they say, we have good news and we have bad news. The good news can be seen on that branch those two men are carrying. That's one bunch of grapes. And the branch is bending under the load. The bad news is you haven't yet seen the people that eat those grapes. And there's no way we're going in there. And the test of faith comes and is failed, just as we so oftentimes do in our own life. And sadly enough, Moses, with the dream in his grasp and the chance of going home, leading the people of God home so quickly, has to turn around and go with them back out into the desert. People who had a chance to act on faith demanded data and failed the test just as Eve had done in the Garden of Eden. But might I point out to you something of interest here? Even though the church, if I might use that word, failed at that time, God's faithful people stayed with it and went back out into the desert with it. They did not leave the church. You suppose that Moses and Joshua and Caleb had the right to say, if you can't see it, we can, we'll go on without you. But they did not. Back out into the desert with the failing people of God, because that was where they were supposed to be. That was God's church. Now, someone in later times has put it this way, enfeebled and defective as it may appear, the church is still the object of God's supreme regard. Well, we see so many things happening in the desert. I want to be brief this morning because the hour is late. But let's watch Moses going up into the distance, climbing a mountain. He's climbed Sinai once before, and now it's getting late in his life. And his older brother Aaron is getting old and feeble. And Eleazar goes up with Aaron and Moses, and they climb that mountain, and they disappear into the distance. And the people of Israel watch them go until they recede as tiny specks up on the mountain peak, and they're gone for a while. And then some sharp-eyed lookout says, they're coming back. I see them, but I only see two. And as they come back down and they begin to be reconciled, Eleazar is wearing the priestly robes. Moses and Aaron have had to say goodbye. It is not too long thereafter that Moses has to climb a mountain of his own. It's called Nebo. And from it, on a clear day, and most of them are, with good eyes you can look right out to the border of the promised land, see the beginning of home. So long delayed, such a long dream deferred. And Moses climbs that mountain because Moses has made a mistake. You see, the lesson that he learned in his youth still has a vestige of presence in his life. You do not do the work of God in your own way, even in righteous anger. And weary finally of the continual lack of faith that he has seen among God's people, he gives way to temper when patience would have been much more like the nature of God. And he fails to exhibit the God that he has been speaking for. And the Lord said, Moses, I can't take you across. I can't take you across the river. You're going to stop here. Someone else will take your place. And he goes up that lonely mountain, this time all alone. You can kind of see him brushing that old gray hair out of his eyes with those old blue-veined hands. About the age of 120. Looks out over the distance. And he sees a home that he will not personally visit, not on this earth. And then, I believe, with prophetic eyes, he looks forward. He sees the future of Israel. He sees their successes and he sees their failures. He sees the advent of Messiah and he sees the hope of the world. And he sees, finally, somewhere downstream in time, even beyond our present day, the end of the war when the whole family on heaven and on earth are back together again. And I imagine his memories kind of drift back. Kadesh Barnea, back to Sinai, back to that incredible day by the Red Sea when beneath the rod of God, the ocean, an inland ocean, thunderously obeys the will of God. Goes back to Midian and those many years in the desert. Finally back to Egypt. And the memories fade out. And like a tired old warrior, he goes to sleep. Now, but for the gospel, that would be the end of the story. But the grave is not the ultimate victor, not as long as Messiah will visit this world and win the fight. The grave is only a resting place. And for Moses, there is about to be acted out this drama of the hope that everyone has who leaves this world momentarily in the sleep of death. We do not find it, to my knowledge, in the Old Testament scriptures. But in the writings of the New Testament, there is clear evidence that Moses was not in the grave very long before he, symbolically at least, felt the gentle hand of God on his shoulder, saying, "Moses, wake up. It's time to go home." And so it is for all of us. And a writer in the New Testament who writes so clearly, who has so much to say that is of value to us, whom I like to read because he was, after all, a Jewish lawyer, put it this way, can be found in the book of Hebrews, chapter 11. "By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents because they saw he was a proper child. He was the proper child, and he was not afraid of the king's commandments. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Through faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as dry land, which the Egyptians, essaying to do, were drowned." And then this writer goes on and says, "And what more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak, of Samson, of Jephthah, of David also, and Samuel, and of the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on this earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country, but now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city."
There, I believe, is where Moses finds himself this morning. And I wonder whether once again he is asking himself, how long will it take the people of God to decide to go home?
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright, American Christian Ministries. All rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministries.org. There you would discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.